Hello and welcome to The Whole Health Cure, a space for trustworthy, science-based information on how you can live healthier, longer, and happier naturally. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist, a practicing Yale and Harvard-trained physician and scientist with 3 decades of experience specializing in chronic disease prevention, longevity, and human performance. Today's conversation is about our most precious resource, our energy. How we can make it, and more importantly, how we can use it wisely. I'm joined by Dr. Diana Hill, the author of Wise Effort, How to Focus Your Genius Energy on What Matters Most. Dr. Hill is a clinical psychologist, international trainer, and a leading expert on acceptance and commitment therapy, a revolutionary approach to psychology that is changing our understanding of mental health. Drawing from the most current psychological research and contemplative wisdom, Diana bridges science with real-life practices to help people grow fulfilling and impactful lives. She is the author of 3 other books, including I Know I Should Exercise, But, The Compassion Daily Journal, and ACT Daily Journal. She's the host of Wise Effort podcast, and her insights have been featured in NPR, Wall Street Journal, Psychology Today, Real Simple, and other national media. Diana, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Sharon. It's so good to be here with you.
Diana, our energy is our vital force. You know, in health and medicine, I think energy impairment drives most of the symptoms I see. It is the underlying problem behind so many chronic diseases and the way we age. And so much of our modern world puts our energy under attack because so many aspects of our living affect how our cells can produce energy, specifically through the mitochondria. And this just pairs beautifully with your work on how we can use energy most effectively. So what is Wise Effort?
Well, Wise Effort, the term comes from the Eightfold Path of Buddhism. So it's one of other types of wise things that are connected to enlightenment, things like wise speech or wise mindfulness, wise livelihood. Wise Effort is about how you use your energy. And the way that I approach it is really from a psychological perspective, that you are lining up your life force with your values, using your energy in wise ways. And that doesn't always mean less, right? So I received a handwritten thank you note from you, Sharon. And it takes, let me tell you, it takes a lot more energy to sit down, write the note, put it in the mail, a few days to get here. And when I got it in the mail, it was a transmission of energy. It gave me more energy than if you had sent me an email. That's wise effort, right? So wise effort sometimes is putting more energy into things because they matter to you. They're important to you. They're linked to something that gives you a little bit of vitality, and putting less effort, less energy into the things that deplete you, that drain you, that disperse your energy. And folks today are feeling very overwhelmed, energy scattered all over the place, like they're doing more than they've ever done, and yet they never feel like they're doing enough. So Wise Effort is a method to help people, a psychological method to help people get back on track.
And I see that every day, you know, in my patients and in my colleagues, you know, professionally. I think that is something that is one level, just conceptually so important. And then the practice of it is probably, you know, even harder. Let's try and break that down a little bit. You mentioned in your book, genius energy. So what is a person's genius energy?
Well, some people might recoil a little bit at this word genius. I certainly got some pushback when I talked about genius because people associate genius with things like the Stanford-Binet test, right? And what I'm talking about here is a different kind of genius. Actually, if you look at the root of the word genius, it goes back to Roman times where genius was considered to be sort of like a spirit that traveled from house to house to house to protect people. And in Greek times, your genius was often seen to come from hardship. So what I see as genius energy is the qualities that make you you, your je ne sais quoi, sort of like your mojo, the unique aspects of you. And from a psychological science perspective, I look at genius from 5 different angles. So your interests, we all know that when you are engaged with your interests, you can enter into that state of flow that Mihai Mihai talks about, where you just like lose time because you're so into your guitar, or you're so into your gardening, or you're so into writing your paper. Your genius energy is also your personality pattern. Do you have that tendency to be a little bit more reserved, a little more conscientious? Are you the life of the party? And again, when you are in that genius, you feel energized, right? Your genius is also your emotional intelligence. When you feel drawn to help somebody, or what do people call you for when they need your help? They're calling upon that unique emotional intelligence genius. It's also your abilities, the things that come easily to you that may be hard for others. You and I were just talking, Sharon, about getting on a stage with 1,000 people. And we were both like, yeah, bring it on. 1,000 people is less energy for me than one person. Well, what's that about? It's also about our abilities around public speaking or engaging intellectually. That's part of your genius. So your genius energy has these sort of qualities. And then finally, your character strengths. There's a lot of research in the area of positive psychology, Martin Seligman, sort of the father of positive psychology, that alludes to these strengths, these qualities like leadership and humility and honesty that also build you up, strengthen you. And when you use that genius energy out in the world, it's not super effortful. It's almost like effortless, but you shine. It's like a bright star or a light bulb lit up from the inside out, and people want to be around you because it's your genius energy.
I love that. You know, you just say that it's less effortful, but it's not doing less, right? I mean, and that's a really important concept, because I think sometimes people think it's a message to slow down, but that's not what you're saying. You're just saying, how do we channel this? Is that right?
How do we channel it? How do we see it as a dial? How do we direct it? If we think of it as a flow of energy, like a big river, what are the banks of that river putting it in the right spot, right? It's actually something that really frustrates me, because I have a lot of drive. I have a lot of ambition. I have a lot of sort of genius energy in the arena of learning new things and creating new content. And people in my life have told me, just dial it back, take a break, take a rest. And that to me is like an insult to my genius. Like, I don't want to dial it back, but maybe I do need to make sure that I'm being wise in my decision-making around where and how am I putting that. We were talking about earlier, you know, am I putting that, some of that genius energy into designing my son's surf trip for his 16th birthday? That's super wise effort for me, right? Doing some of the research and the planning and getting it all lined up. And I might choose to prioritize that over designing maybe a workshop related to work right now, because that's not calling my genius energy in the same way. And it really isn't aligned with my values at this moment in time. But another moment in time, that may be where I want to put it. So wise effort is discernment. It's being able to check in with your body, that whole body yes, when your body says, yes, that's right for me, or the whole body no, when your body says, no, that's not right for me. It's also about tapping into many sources of wisdom beyond just sort of our shoulds and our stories, but rather checking in with our intuition, checking in, like I said, with our bodies, checking with nature, checking with other wise beings that have guided us. And then we can decide how and how much we use that genius energy.
And the process of finding your genius energy and kind of cultivating that ability to identify what is transgressing your values, that is a very difficult process. I know you work with so many clients. What is the process you use to help guide people?
Well, first, you know, when I have a client coming into my space, they're often coming in because they're at a crossroads, they have a problem in their life, they're going through something really hard, maybe they have a mental health condition. I see in every single client that's sitting in the space across from me, or sometimes is walking with me, because I do walking sessions too, I see in every single client strengths. I can't not see them, but they often can't see them in themselves. Right? So one way to access your genius energy would be to do a little bit of curiosity around you as a kid. Maybe we can see it. Maybe if we do this perspective shift and act itself as context, where you sort of do this playing with perspective. When you were a kid and you had to face something that was hard, what qualities showed up during that time or developed during that time? When you were a kid and things came easily to you, what were the things that came easily to you in school? For me, I remember science class, and I remember my sixth grade science teacher gave me this lab notebook. Writing for English class made me want to pull my hair out. But writing down procedures, those bullet points, the method and the procedure in that lab notebook was like my favorite thing to do on the planet. Well, guess what? That really translates into how I communicate through writing now. I'm a bullet pointer. I'm a procedural person. If you read my book, you'll say, oh, there's actually a method that goes way back to sixth grade science. So there's these qualities about you that when you get curious and you have an open mind, and it's not the type of deprivation curiosity where we're trying to get to some answer, like, this is my genius, write it in stone, but more just getting curious about who you are, what makes you tick, what brings you to life. When over the course of this last week, did you feel like things were just flowing and easy for you? What was going on there? What abilities were showing up? What strengths were showing up? This strength-based lens is often not what we put on ourselves. We don't want to seem like we're narcissists. We don't want to seem self-absorbed. We don't want to be so showy. But actually, when you utilize your strength, like for example, utilizing your strengths in the workplace, you're three times more likely to be engaged at work and less likely to quit your job. When a leader points out your strengths in the workplace, productivity goes up, and also performance and how much that company makes in terms of money goes up. So strengths are actually one place where we could put a little bit more energy is in strength spotting in ourselves and in each other.
Do you find that people at different ages and stages in life find it easier to identify those strengths and those values? You know, I think of myself, if you had told me this in my 20s, I would have said, well, this is great information, but I was so driven by more cognitive things that I knew I needed to get done rather than the tuning into my strengths. It was just like, just push through. And I probably maybe paid less attention to how much energy I was putting in inefficiently. And maybe it's because I have less energy as I get older that I'm trying to use it more wisely. But to me, the ability to identify your strengths, I think for me at least, it's easier, later in life, certainly to identify values and to really uphold them is something that has come easier later in life. Do you find that that is the exception, the rule? Do you find it, for people listening who are in their 20s, do you have any advice that may or may not be different than, say, people in their 50s?
Well, one thing that I think blocks our ability to identify our strengths and what I write about in Wise Effort really misdirects our energy is when we are stuck in stories that include things like shoulds and how life is supposed to go and who we are. Some of our stories that we have about ourselves are the stories that other people told us about us. And then we believe them to be true without ever really questioning them or tuning in to our own truth. And I think that can especially happen when you are a young adult. You know, you're looking outside of yourself for answers, and there are plenty of people that will tell you, what you should do, right? And what is a right career path? And this sort of very linear expectation that it's like the game of life. I don't know if you've ever played this game, but I played it when my kids were little. I remembered liking it when I was a kid. And so we bought the game of life, and I was horrified by this game because what you do is you get the little car and then you put the little pink person and the little blue person, already a problem, into the car. And then you take the car along this path and your job is to go to college, get a career, get married, have kids, and the whole game of life is to get to retirement at the end, and you win if you have the mansion and you lose if you have the shack. I mean, this is what we're teaching our six-year-olds about the game of life. So that is a story, folks, because nobody lives that. Everybody has ups and downs and twists and turns. And really, the game of life is to get to know what are your strengths and how to adapt. that's the game of life. If you can be flexible and you can get clear on what your values are, then when life, which is a guarantee, throws you something that you don't expect, or in Zen, the koan rips the rug out of you and then rips the floor from out from under the rug, which will happen to you multiple times in life. If you are rooted in your values and you are flexible in your behavior, you will know how to play the game. And that is not linear. So part of that is dropping the story, knowing what story is in your way, and being able to identify that that's a story that misdirects much of our efforts, and then getting clear, living more from the heart mind, which is a different part of you than the story mind.
One thing that you mentioned that I think is so, like, it just hits home is that some of the strengths that a person has can also be overutilized or underutilized and then become our weakness, you know. And I say that as someone who, you know, has a lot of perseverance, but I definitely stick it out through situations where I would be better off just, like, you know, cutting my losses, you know, instead of just putting more energy into something that I just can't let go of. What are ways to have that awareness when a form of strength can start to become a form of weakness?
Yeah, I call it your frenemy in the book. And I have perseverance too. And perseverance has been my frenemy my whole life. It's done great things. It gets you through a PhD program and it gets you
and
through
medical school.
medical school and having babies and writing books. Yes. And thank goodness. I mean, I don't think that if you didn't have some perseverance, you wouldn't be able to do those things. And that genius can become your very problem if you're persevering because of a story or a should, or to avoid discomfort. I don't want to feel the feeling of being still, or I'm avoiding the discomfort of, you know, many people stay busy and work really hard because there's some kind of void in their relationship, in their marriage, or they stay really busy and work really hard because they're avoiding the truth that actually what they're working hard at isn't their dream at all. They have some other dream that's kind of whispering in their ear, and it's something that their society has told them they shouldn't do, like go be a musician or a chef or whatever it is. So our genius can become a problem when it gets off track from our values. When I was recording the audiobook, I was with these incredible producers in this beautiful sound studio. And they're sort of like, do you remember like the lice lady in school, where they would like look at every single hair and they could find the nits? Well, the audio producers are like that. They're listening to every single word you say and then making you say it again if you don't pronounce it. They're like super detail oriented. This is their genius. They're in the right spot using their genius, right? And we were on a break and I said, does that genius ever become a problem for you in your life? Like in relationships? I was envisioning them in a relationship. This must be nightmarish, right? You're listening to every single word that I say with this detail. And one of them said, yes, I have a teenager and I just have to dial it back a little bit because I'm so detail focused. That's wise. That's wise. Know when to pick it up and when to put it down. Know how much. And know that you have this superpower, but you get to use it the way that you want to use it. And that's what I see as wise effort, is being really clear. Like, I have strengths. I've got some superpowers. Every human does. You can look at your children. You can look at your cousins. You can look at your best friends and you can see it in them. Like, that is the thing that I just makes you you. And that is the thing that gets in your way. You can see it both, right? So getting an understanding of how your genius becomes a problem and having a little humor, a little perspective on yourself is always helpful as well too.
What are other examples of traits that can be geniuses, but then over or underdone can be kind of a misdirection of energy?
Oh, there's so many of them. I mean, we could think about humor, you know, somebody that's so funny, but they can't really go deep because they're always making a joke, you know, and they kind of are using it to avoid life in some way. We could think about people that are great problem solvers and they turn everything into a problem to be solved, including their partner and their grief. And you're like, grief is not a problem that you can solve. It's something you need to sit with and move through. right? So there's so many different qualities that we have that can go sideways on us.
Yeah. And it's helpful to have those examples. And I ask because you put so many good ones in the book. And I think just it kind of hits when you realize that, you know, most of us have multiple. I mentioned perseverance, but as I was reading the other traits, I think a lot of people have multiple forms of, quote, genius energy, you know, the way you use that term, which I think is genius, actually. And then it helps to see how we can push it to the point where something is hindering us. And so I think that it's so valuable to point those out, you know, because they're all like such fundamental traits that we all have. And we're usually a blend of so many that you mentioned. So that's super helpful.
Yeah. You know, I noticed your genius when I interviewed you. And it's one of the reasons why I just loved our interview, because you are like a walking encyclopedia of so much information around nutrition, around the body, around, I mean, we could go into any topic and you could talk for an hour on, I mentioned I had cinnamon in my tea. Like I could just say I had cinnamon in my tea and you could probably talk for an hour around why it's beneficial to have cinnamon in your tea down to the cellular level, right? And I could also see, because I relate, that that could become a problem, right? It's like you, I mean, I imagine you had a hard time writing a book because you're like, even though your book is so jam-packed, I mean, your book is so jam-packed, I could spend a lot of time on one chapter that you still had to edit a lot of things out. And that was probably hard. So this is the thing, like the thing that makes us us and that is so great and so beautiful and attracts people to us, we also need to know how to manage. And the way that we manage it, this is the important part. And this is related to your work with good stress and the stress paradox, is that it's not just dialing it back. The way that we manage it is sometimes we have to be with the discomfort. We have to be with the uncomfortable feelings that show up around not overdoing our genius, but also not underdoing a genius, because sometimes we don't bring it into the room when we need to bring it in. We block ourselves from showing up as fully as we can show up, from playing as big as we can play. We hide our genius, right? It can be uncomfortable. So that is really important, is the open up stage. I start with getting curious. That's a big part of the book. But the second part is about opening up, which I think is equally important in terms of channeling wise effort and using our genius in ways that are effective and regenerative.
Yeah, I do think there's so much synergy with the idea of good stress, in that there is going to be discomfort, but you cannot have the growth. You cannot get to the other side of, you know, using your energy optimally without that. And, you know, when you were talking about the perseverance, I was thinking about really the fear that comes with letting go of those stories, because so much of identity is wrapped in them.
Yeah, I interviewed Courtney Smith. She wrote a book called Choosing Wholeness Over Goodness with Elise Lonin. And she talks about, if you let go of that story and the fear shows up, what are you afraid of? She highlights three things, which actually I could link to evolutionary roots to each of them. But the first one is, are you afraid of losing control? Are you afraid of losing approval? Or are you afraid of losing security? So we follow the story. We play the game of life, because if we play the game of life, then people will like us and we'll be secure and we'll have control. But unfortunately, it also keeps our lives really small and narrow and doesn't give us the opportunity to offer our fullest self. And if you are small and narrow and rigid, you're more likely to break when the game doesn't go your way. So we have to get more comfortable with not being in control. We have to get more comfortable with not everyone approving. The bigger you play, the more feedback you will get about, I don't agree with that. What's this genius stuff? What's this, you know? And we have to get more comfortable with the possibility that we don't know. It's just uncertain, and that it isn't secure. Our greatest security is actually in Buddhism, there's something called the five remembrances, where the monastics will read this every single morning, which is like, I remember that I'm going to grow old. I remember that I'm going to get sick. I remember that everything that I love, I will lose. They read this every single morning. I remember that I'm going to die. And then the fifth remembrance is the most powerful one, which I remember that my only true belongings are my actions. And that is what we need to remember, whether it's choosing good stress, like the actions that I take of making myself, putting myself in these conditions to build my resilience, or choosing my values, even if it doesn't turn out how I want it to turn out, I can remember that my belonging is in my actions. And that's, I think, really what's more empowering than being locked in by some story that I need to hold on to control and everyone has to like me and I have to be safe. Those have, as I said, evolutionary roots in our evolutionary psychology, just like you talk about the evolution of our biology. Our psychology evolved in a certain way that is a mismatch for our current environment. Just like our biology evolved in a certain way that's a mismatch for our current environment, that biological mismatch, it's the same. So we evolved to do everything in our power to be part of the group, to compare ourselves to others, to make sure we fit in. But that doesn't work so well when now our comparison group is a million people on Instagram and fake people. You know, we evolved to stay safe at the best of our ability to avoid anything that is scary. That doesn't work so well when what is scary can be generated in our own minds and isn't really harmful to us. Getting on a stage of 1,000 people can be scary, but no one's going to eat you alive. I remember texting a friend once saying, they're going to eat me alive. She's like, they're not going to, they can't eat you alive. So we evolved certain ways of responding to the world that are unwise efforts to be stuck in a story, to avoid discomfort, to hold on too tight. And wise effort is something completely different.
I love the framing in our evolutionary past because it makes it so normal to have these instincts. There's so much that we have to be aware of that is just part of the human experience. And I think we all struggle with these. So I appreciate just saying that this is how we adapted. These are such normal traits. It's just in our modern world, they don't always serve us well.
Yeah.
That also brings me to, you know, one of the things you also mention in your book is there's this internal work that we all have to do to, you know, certainly identify our values, get curious and open up. And we all work in environments. And this is where it gets tricky, right? Because some people may be listening and thinking, well, it's great to follow my values, but I've got to put dinner on the dinner table. I've got a mortgage to pay. Sometimes I just have to do whatever I have to do. What do you say to that?
Well, two things. One, I practice something called process-based therapy or ACT, which is a contextual behavioral therapy, which psychology has long ignored context. We think it's all within your power as an individual to eat better and exercise more and make money. But some people do not have access to food in the same way that other people have access to fresh foods, right? Some people have more free time than others because of privilege and context and all sorts of things, right? If you are a working single parent, you do not have as much time. I want to acknowledge that. And actually in the book, we have a whole chapter on environmental contexts that drain our energy and the role that things like our workplace, toxic workplaces, going through transitions, different types of relationships can be energetic drains. And I will say, there's a difference between values and, I'm using air quotes here, following your dreams. Values can be done anywhere, anytime, no matter what you're doing. If you're doing the dishes, if you're at the airport, if you are in a really challenging conversation with someone, you can show up with your values. And the analogy that I'll often use, because I had this book for a long time, Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. A lot of people had this book, and he talks about before you start climbing a ladder, make sure you know what wall it's against. So we can spend a lot of time choosing what walls to put our ladder against. Is this the right job for me? Is this the right person for me? Is this the right house for me? Should I move here or should I move there? How many hours I've spent in this decision-making tree with people thinking that if I turn right, it's going to be right, and I turn left, it's going to be wrong. And I say, well, yeah, that kind of matters. That can impact things. But sometimes you don't have control over what wall your ladder is against. But what you do have control over It's how you climb that ladder. Are you stepping on people while you're climbing? Are you enjoying the process and being mindful and aware and conscious while you're climbing? What type of climber do you want to be? Do you want to be adventurous? Do you want to be kind? Do you want to be present? Do you want to be honest? Are you harming yourself in how you climb the ladder? That is where our power lies. And those qualities, the qualities that we bring to any activity, our actions are only belongings, back to Buddhism. This is where contemplative practice and science often kind of come together. And I mean, super secular, right? Not like the religion of Buddhism, but some of the principles of it. The how is really important, and the how is your values. So that's different than your dreams. You may wish that your ladder were against a big mansion wall, like in the game of life, but that might not be the case. And if you end up in a shack or you live in a shack, you can still live your values. I'm in this like weird transition house where we had to move out of our house and it's tiny and I got two kids in a room where they're fighting all the time and we're all on top of each other and it's like the dishwasher doesn't work. I mean, it's kind of like a mess right now. And I can still live my values. No matter where we are planted, we can do that.
That is so important. I think that sometimes, you know, there are a lot of people that I see that they aren't either happy in a relationship or happy at work. And they want to find some solutions where they feel stuck. And just starting with finding that value of what matters to you just seems like a good place to just begin, at least. Or how would you advise people? I'm sure you work with a lot of people who just, be it home life, be it work life, have this sense where, you know, they're either in an environment that doesn't value them or in a relationship that doesn't value them. How do you advise people to find their values and work through that?
Well, your values are how you want to show up in the world. And oftentimes our pain points point to our values. You may be in a difficult relationship. Say you're in a, you know, an estranged relationship with your mother. Yeah, you got some challenges with your mother. Who doesn't have challenges with their mother? I've yet to meet anyone. Okay, so even if you have the greatest mother on the planet, you got challenges with your mother or your mother has passed or whatever. Your values are, if you were to look back on your life 10 years from now and you were to put some words down to describe how you showed up in relationship with your mother, independent of how your mom showed up, what would those words be? That's one step. Here's another step further on that. And you could insert your mom or your ex or your boss or whoever you want to insert into that, right? The next step is, okay, so if you were to do that, maybe it's like, okay, I just want to be like understanding of my mom and see her be loving towards her and not irritable or whatever. In order to do that, what would you need to feel or open up to or accept? And I don't mean accept as in like accept her poor behavior. I mean, inside of you, what would you need to radically accept? Because oftentimes we need to both change our behavior, change our actions. That's what we have control over. And accept, make space for, allow, welcome, whatever word you want to put in there, be willing to experience some form of discomfort. And what uses up a lot of energy is when we're trying to change something that's unchangeable and being unwilling to accept reality as it is. And then we're digging in our heels and we're not making the changes where we actually have agency to make a change. So we need to flip that script. And it could be as simple as making two columns, like one list, one column, I write down my values and what I have agency over and where I can make changes in my behavior. I can't change anyone else's behavior. And the other column is, what am I willing to accept given the circumstances that I cannot change? And as soon as you accept, you regain energy because you're no longer using your energy to push something away. I'm pushing my hands out. I'm gripping my hands. I'm holding my breath. I'm tensing my shoulders. And you can even, I'm sure, Sharon, you could tell us the physiology that's happening in our body and the stress response. It's not great for us. That's not the good stress. And its impact on us. And we know its impact on us psychologically too, because we're not using our energy in the places that actually want to use it that matter to us.
One of the things I love about how you just guided us through that process is really what you do in the book, which is exercises, right? Like as you're talking, you know, I'm thinking of things I can do out of a workbook style, you know, make a column for this and think about this is the question to ask yourself. I love that style because it gives every person kind of the right framework for doing the type of work to kind of follow what you're saying. And you have so many great points in your book where you stop and say, okay, here are the questions and here are really exercises that we can just really take the time to actually do. So it's so practical. It's kind of like the privilege of being your client without directly being your client. So I think that's wonderful. Diane, is there anything you want to mention that we haven't touched on that you think is something really valuable for people listening about how they should use their or understand their energy?
I guess the place that I'm really landing in these days is to start to think about your life force as a flow, that it can flow out. You can make a positive impact in this world, even by doing very, very, very small things that has a ripple effect. And also it can flow in. You can receive good energy into your body and your being. And it doesn't have to be so either or. I think especially with like healthcare providers, parents, people that want to do good in the world, they have this energetic flow out. I was just with a group of therapists earlier today, and they were talking about how at the end of the day, it's like their partner gets the leftovers because the best of them went to their patients in the first, you know, 6 hours of their day. And I'm like, wait a minute here. There's something wrong there. I want it to be a flow. I want you to send your good energy out and be able to receive your good energy in. And that requires wise effort. It requires some wisdom. It requires getting curious about you. What makes you you? What makes you tick? What gets you off track? Get curious about that. It requires opening up, opening your heart, opening your mind, opening your sense of self, opening up to change. And then it requires you focusing your energy like a camera. We need to focus it. Sometimes we need to focus it up, you know, get a little bit more dialed. Sometimes we need to expand it a little bit. That's my hope, is that if we all were engaging in wiser efforts, then our world would be a better place. We would have the good kind of stress because we're like, it's wise effort to go stress myself on purpose, and a little bit less of the not so helpful kind of stress. And we'd be, you know, living in a little bit more harmony, which is something that I care a lot about because, you know, we're leaving this planet to kids, your kids, my kids, your nieces and nephews, the kids that you don't even know across the way. We need to like level up, folks, and leave it a little bit better than the way it is right now.
100%. Diana, for people who want to learn more about your book and connect with you, what's the best way for them to find you?
You can find me at wiseeffort.com everywhere, and drdianahill.com. I'm on Instagram mostly, if you do social media. And I have lots of things. I'm going to do a Wise Effort for Couples thing, which is going to be really fun. I have Wise Effort for Therapists. I have Wise Effort for Book Writers that want to write a book, which is kind of a side interest of mine. And the podcast is Wise Effort as well. And you can go listen to Sharon. It's like one of my favorite episodes of the year. You were so good. You were so good. So go listen to her and she'll tell you about why the arugula in my garden was growing so well and why it's so good for me. It's like, thank you. Yeah.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Diane. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and share it with a friend. Until next time, do something to help improve your whole health naturally.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.